Chapter 47. Midst of the noise and dust of having seen Mr. Jack Maldon rattle past with an agitated face and something cherry-colored in his hand, after another broadside for the doctor and another for the doctor's wife, the boys dispersed, and I went back into the house, where I found the guests all standing in a group about the doctor, discussing how Mr. Jack Maldon had gone away, and how he had borne it, and how he had felt it, and all the rest of it. In the midst of these remarks, Mrs. Markleham cried, "Where's Annie?" No Annie was there, and when they called to her, no Annie replied. But all pressing out of the room, in a crowd, to see what was the matter, we found her lying on the hall floor. There was great alarm at first, until it was found that she was in a swoon, and that the swoon was yielding to the usual means of recovery, when the doctor, who had lifted her head upon his knee, put her curls aside with his hand, and said, looking around, "Poor Annie! She's so faithful and tender-hearted. It's the parting from her old playfellow and friend, her favorite cousin, that has done this. Ah! It's a pity. I am very sorry." When she opened her eyes, and saw where she was, and that we were all standing about her, she arose with assistance, turning her head, as she did so, to lay it on the doctor's shoulder, or to hide it, I don't know which. We went into the drawing room, to leave her with the doctor and her mother. But she said, it seemed, that she was better than she had been since morning, and that she would rather be brought among us. So they brought her in, looking very white and weak, I thought, and sat her on a sofa. "Annie, my dear," said her mother, doing something to her dress. "See here. You have lost a bow. Will anybody be so good as find a ribbon? A cherry-colored ribbon?" It was the one she had worn at her bosom. We all looked for it. I myself looked everywhere, I am certain, but nobody could find it. "Do you recollect where you had it last, Annie?" said her mother. I wondered how I could have thought she looked white, or anything but burning red, when she answered that she had had it safe a little while ago, she thought, but it was not worth looking for. Nevertheless, it was looked for again, and still not found. She entreated that there might be no more searching, but it was still sought for, in a desultory way, until she was quite well, and the company took their departure. We walked very slowly home, Mr. Wickfield, Agnes and I admiring the moonlight, and Mr. Wickfield scarcely raising his eyes from the ground. When we, at last, reached our own door, Agnes discovered that she had left her little reticule behind. Delighted to be of any service to her, I ran back to fetch it. I went into the supper room, where it had been left, which was deserted and dark. But a door of communication between that and the doctor's study, where there was a light, being open, I passed on there, to say what I wanted, and to get a candle. The doctor was sitting in his easy chair by the fireside, and his young wife was on a stool at his feet. The doctor, with a complacent smile, was reading aloud some manuscript explanation or statement of a theory out of that interminable dictionary, and she was looking up at him, but with such a face as I never saw. It was so beautiful in its form, it was so ashy pale, it was so fixed in its abstraction, it was so full of a wild, sleep-walking, dreamy horror of I don't know what. The eyes were wide open, and her brown hair fell in two rich clusters on her shoulders, and on her white dress, disordered by the want of the lost ribbon. Distinctly as I recollect her look, I cannot say of what it was expressive, I cannot even say of what it is expressive to me now, rising again before my older judgment. Penitence, humiliation, shame, pride, love, and trustfulness, I see them all. And in them all, I see that horror of I don't know what. My entrance, and my saying what I wanted, roused her. It disturbed the doctor too, for when I went back to replace the candle I had taken from the table, he was patting her head, in his fatherly way, and saying he was a merciless drone, to let her tempt him into reading on, and he would have her go to bed. But she asked him, in a rapid, urgent manner, to let her stay, to let her feel assured. I heard her murmur some broken words to this effect, that she was in his confidence that night. And, as she turned again towards him, after glancing at me as I left the room, and went out at the door, I saw her cross her hands upon his knee, and look up at him with the same face, something quieted, as he resumed his reading. It made a great impression on me, and I remembered it a long time afterwards, as I shall have occasion to narrate when the time comes. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.